Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They get the politics and know the policy. They help prepare elected officials to have winning strategies in the legislature. And you can find out more by visiting the website, thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Devin Watkins, Senior Attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. He is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Well, you're in Tel Aviv right now, and I wanted to start off with our discussion by just checking in on, apparently, Netanyahu was rushed off to the hospital, maybe with some dehydration, not sure, but just want to see if you could give us an update.
Sure. Well, dehydration was just a story they gave because there's no way you get dehydrated a day after you're in the sun. So he was in the sun on Friday, and then he got sick. He lost consciousness, fell, hit his head in his house in Caesarea on Saturday.
Huh.
So I can't tell you what actually happened, but I can tell you with pretty large certitude it wasn't dehydration. Because, like I said, you know, when you get dehydrated, you get it when you're in the sun, immediately afterwards, not a day later.
Well, although dehydration is not always related to being in the sun, you know, it could have been that his water intake was insufficient. 10, 12.
He claimed he was in the sun on Friday, and that's why he got it. But no, I mean, regardless, this day has a problem. It doesn't look like it's serious.
Yeah.
He did all sorts of exams, and he's out of the hospital. But that's the least of Israel's problems right now. The country is very much coming apart over this whole issue of changing the judicial system. The government is going ahead with it despite all of the opposition. The hundreds of thousands of people have come out every single week now for 27 weeks.
Wow.
There have been civil disobedience, which is going to be tomorrow's a day of civil disobedience. More threatening to the country is the fact that large parts of the military reservists are saying they're going to resign from reserve duty if this passes.
Huh.
Including pilots who are not easily replaceable, let's put it that way.
Absolutely. So is Netanyahu sticking by his guns? He's not changing
his... He's sticking by his guns. He's afraid he's going to lose the rest of his coalition if he backs down. He thinks he can pull this off. It's so strange in a way because this is like a crisis. I mean, Israel has plenty of issues and plenty of crises and et cetera, et cetera. This is like a crisis of her own making or his own making, let's put it that way. And it's very problematic. I mean, you know, people are upset is the understatement. And like I said, people, you know, almost every former chief of staff of the army, heads of the security services, all those sort of people are all against this. Just his government is pushing it forward. And, you know, they talk about that they had to have the mandate from the people. Now, they didn't run on this. On top of which, they have a narrow majority by world standard, 64 to 56 in the parliament. But when it came to raw votes, I mean, there was like, you know, 50,000 votes between those who supported the government and those who opposed it, and that's not exactly what you'd call an overwhelming majority.
No, it's not. That's so interesting. We'll watch and see how this all plays out, but it sounds like Netanyahu, and you said, I think the word you use is the government is falling apart, or the situation...
The country feels like it's falling apart. It's not the government. The government itself is holding together. Now, I should say that President Herzog, who is nonpartisan, is coming to America tonight, I believe. He's meeting President Biden tomorrow and addressing a joint session of Congress on Wednesday.
Interesting.
So this is sort of a celebration of Israel's 75th anniversary. So that's taking place. That was a long-standing invitation that he had received. So he's coming. I think he's leaving Israel tonight.
Any update on the situation with Iran?
No, I mean, look, it's not at all clear. There are reports that the United States and Iran have reached some sort of non-formal agreement. It's not clear at all if that's true or not. You know, you get all sorts of rumors in various ways. Clearly, this would not be the time for Israel to attack Iran, and it's not really clear what that would accomplish in any case. And so I would say there's no real update. Again, look, the biggest mistake was leaving the agreement. And that mistake was done, and now we're living with the consequences of it. So where that's going to go, nobody knows. Again, one of the things Israel has been doing is putting additional effort into its missile defense system and has a three-layer, multi-layer missile defense system. And therefore, if the Iranians do try to attack, the odds are not zero, but relatively slim that one of the rockets will get through. So
that's good. So, Mark, let's move to apparently Putin has turned down and dissolved the grain agreement, allowing grain to leave Ukraine, which is a big deal because Ukraine, of course, is the breadbasket for Europe. And I just want to get your thoughts about this and what the impact this might have.
First of all, I mean, the key is not so much for Europe. Europe, they can get to, they can ship the grain by land.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is more of Africa and parts of Asia, but because Ukraine has been a breadbasket for much of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the problem. The problem is primarily Africa, who gets an awful lot of its grain from the Ukraine. A lot of the aid agencies buy the grain from there. Listen, Putin is looking for something some card to play, and this is pretty much his only card. The Ukrainian advance, I must say, I was a little bit wrong in the sense that the Russian army has not fallen apart, but is slowly falling back. So it's one of these situations. It seems one of the things that the Russians seem to be very good at is planting mines. So they've planted tens of thousands of mines, and that's a difficult thing to traverse without too many casualties. The Ukrainians had been forced to move very, very slowly. But basically, you know, every single day they capture a little more area. I also, you know, remember how long it took to break out of Normandy in World War II. So it's not always easy going on offensive.
No, it's not.
So it's moving slowly, but slowly but surely, let's put it that way. And today the Ukrainians managed to attack, I mean, they don't officially take responsibility, the bridge that connects Crimea with Russia itself. This is the second time, or maybe even the third time, they've attacked it. I mean, the Russians managed to fix it in a couple of days, but once again, it highlights how limited their ability to supply Crimea is. This bridge is one direction, and the other is sort of a land bridge that's the Ukrainians threaten in terms of their offensive to cut the land bridge to Crimea. So, it's slow going, but it's going.
Before we change topics and go to a different part of the world, Putin says, "Well, I've got cluster bombs too."
But he used cluster bombs in the very beginning. Let's keep that in mind.
Yeah,
he was using cluster bombs in the beginning of the war.
Oh, he has.
Yes, he has cluster bombs. Yes, he was using them in the very beginning. He was using cluster bombs. This is nothing new, you know. And again, there was really no choice here. It wasn't that the Ukrainians wanted cluster bombs per se. They wanted bombs.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed over artillery shells, as we've discussed over the last few months, the West has this major problem: is it can't produce these things quick enough. And everyone's gearing up, and I assume in a year from now, there'll be enough manufacturing going on in the United States and in Europe to meet all the demand. But in the meantime, there is no inventory anywhere in the world. Whatever the inventory there is being eaten up by the Ukrainians. And that's the problem, let's put it that way. And so the reason for giving them cluster bombs is there are literally, I think, hundreds of thousands of rounds of cluster bombs in storage that are not going to be used by the United States. And it's a very good solution to an acute problem.
All right, Mark, thank you for that. I need to take a little break. Could you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. 325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
You're a valued professional RN. There's a path that takes you to the next level. Hodges University offers an RN to BSN program that, like you, is way above average. RNs with a BSN have a faster track to pursuing leadership positions and can see faster hourly rate increases than those with an ASN. You can earn your BSN with Hodges in just 1 year. Classes are online and start in August. Scholarships are available. Become the next level nursing professional. Do more. Earn more. Be more. Visit Hodges.edu today.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website, great for kids of all ages, including you and I. It's called HistoryCentral.com. I hope you'll check it out. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Bob.
So, Mark, any comments? One thing that caught my attention was that Russia and China were having joint military exercises in the Sea of Japan. Just wondered if you could comment on what's happening in China and maybe the growing relationship between Russia and China.
Okay, so when I look at the growing relationship between Russia and China, it's really Russia becoming the vassal state of China because, let's put it this way, the Russian Navy is not exactly a great success story. Mm-hmm. The one aircraft carrier had to be retired. We saw how quickly the Ukrainians managed to get rid of one of their advanced cruisers. The Russian Navy would exist above water. I'm not talking about the submarine fleet, but their above water fleet would exist for a matter of minutes in a war with the United States, for instance. The Chinese, we don't know. You know, the Chinese have no long naval tradition, and it's not a negative tradition like the Russians. I mean, if anyone goes all the way back to the Russo-Japanese War, where the Japanese in 1904 completely destroyed the Russian Navy in a matter of hours. The Chinese do not have a long tradition of naval warfare, so I guess, you know, anything they can learn. Again, you know, China, we obsess about China, and I think we obsess a little bit too much about China because they're really in for a difficult economic ride going forward, I believe. You know, again, we've talked about it before, but the demographics are starting to really kick in. It's the effect of, you know, the real estate market that we discussed, the overhang of empty apartments and buildings, is a direct result, obviously, of demography. You know, when your population is growing, you know, build all you can build because you'll always find someone to live in it. When your population is decreasing, it becomes a problem because people will just go to whatever's better because there's greater, more demand than there is people to live in them.
Well, again, I just underscore the importance of free markets versus central planning. I mean, part of this whole issue is created by the fact that people assumed or figured out that somehow, some way the population would grow and fill these apartments. It just hasn't happened.
Right. But remember, I mean, you know, they just ignored reality. I mean, let's be honest. It doesn't require advanced geophysics to know when if the birth rate has been below two for many years, particularly, you know, one child left, you know, only allowing one child per family for all those years, then your population is going to decrease. There's no way. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it's very simple math. I think the mistakes that some of these developers, and this was free market, a lot of these buildings were built by developers. Yes, they got money from banks, and the banking in China is not exactly free market. I mean, sometimes they're independent banks, but the government puts its weight on the scale when to give loans and when not to. But the assumption was also that the continued move from rural to urban was going to continue. Mm-hmm. And I think an equilibrium was reached at this point in terms of the people who are living in the rural towns and villages are those who decided they wanted to stay. They prefer to live in a rural town and village and don't want to live in the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
So that stopped happening as well.
Interesting.
So that's where the overhang lies. So many apartments and so many buildings and no one to live in them.
You know, the Chinese military, my understanding, and I don't have exact information here in front of me, but the Russians are producing major shipbuilding efforts, building aircraft carriers and all kinds of things at a record rate. And while they don't have a history of success in seagoing affairs, they seem to be planning for big confrontations.
The Chinese you're referring to.
I'm Chinese, yes, thank you.
Yeah, the Russians can't build anything at the moment. Yeah, I mean, look, they're trying to build out. They look upon the South China Sea as their home area, same way we look upon the Caribbean as our home area. The only problem for them is that there are countries surrounding it, the Philippines, Taiwan, obviously, South Korea, Thailand, Vietnam, for that matter, were basically allies of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not interested in living in a Chinese sea. So, but the Chinese clearly are expanding. They're increasing the capability. I would not, you know, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is so much of warfare today is electronic warfare. And I would not then, you know, say that the Chinese don't have some advantages there. We don't know.
Yeah.
And we need to be careful about that. And they may have some very real advantages when it comes to electronic warfare.
Mark, I also wanted to get your thoughts on. We seem to be the globe is seeming to gravitate away from the dollar as the exchange for goods and services around the globe. Any comments and thoughts on that?
Now, look, there have been many attempts to move away from the dollar by many groups of people. So far, it has not succeeded. Whether it's going to succeed now, it's not at all clear. The Chinese currency is not really. It's on the basket of reserve currencies, but it's not really it's still too volatile to be used as a reserve currency. Yes, people are doing other things, but still most international transactions, probably 80% of them are denominated in dollars. So, yes, there's always a movement, and people don't want to be dependent on the United States and all those sort of things, but so far it's really not amounted to all that much in terms of actual transactions. Of course, look, it's important for the United States to be a reserve currency because that's one way we can diminish our debt, basically, because if all our debt is in dollars, we can inflate it away if we really want to. I'm not suggesting we should. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So it's important. But look, you know, we go through these phases over these years. I mean, we're never going to go back to the point we were in the 50s where the United States was responsible for 60% of global trade. It will never come back to that, obviously. Will the United States remain the most important economic power? Most likely, but you never know. I mean, look, the big wealthy companies that have been created in the last two decades are all American, right? In other words, except for, you know, Alibaba, which is a questionable who owns it and where is he, but, you know, whether it's Microsoft or Facebook or Apple or Google or Cisco, these are trillion-dollar companies, and they were all American companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you know, we're not the big steel producers we once were. We're even not even much that much of a producer of cars as we were, although we still produce cars. But we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. Mark Schoen, again, founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check it out, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, really appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
My pleasure indeed. All right, coming up, we're going to be visiting with Devin Watkins. He co-authored an interesting piece, Constitutional Restoration, How to Rebuild the Separation of Powers. Really look forward to that conversation. That and more right here in the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.